Hi, Forever family. My name is Misty. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction. One of my favorite Bible verses is Philippians 4:13, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength, like standing here before you and sharing many of the hardest parts of my life, the first 40 years. I was born in September of 1966, fifth and last in line, but the only child of my parents together. I grew up in Southern California, and my folks went into business for themselves when I was four. My dad went to the office every day, and my mom stayed home cooking and cleaning for four children, and she did the books for the business. My parents were really good people and really great at a lot of things, but parenting was difficult for them. While they were united and had a good relationship with each other, having a relationship with their children was not a priority, and my memory of my home life was cold and negative. I was a daughter of anger. My parents did not go to church, even on holidays, and the only time God's name was mentioned in my home was in vain. I struggled a lot. It's not just the things my folks did say to me that left me feeling alienated, but often it was the things that they didn't say, too. I don't ever recall them asking how my day at school was, playing games with us, or connecting with and taking an interest in us. That's not to say that there weren't isolated incidents. It's only to say that I don't remember any. By the time I was eight, my siblings had all moved out. And I remember the day that my mom told me that she hated me because I wore a shirt to school that she wanted me to save for Easter. While she was yelling at me and calling me names, she threw a bottle of makeup on my bedroom floor. The top came off and makeup spilled on the carpet, and that stain stayed on my carpet as long as we lived in that house, reminding me of the day and her words every time I saw it. My father's response that night was to suggest that I move out and in with family members. I was 12 years old. I was a very sensitive child, I still am to this day, and the spoken and unspoken temperature within my home left me feeling unloved, unwanted, and very alone. My brother first smoked pot with me when I was 12. From that point on, I did it as often as I could. I got drunk for the first time a year after that, vodka at a girlfriend's house. I got violently sick and passed out. In later years, drinking alcohol would lead me to drug seeking, cocaine or methamphetamines every single time. My inability to control my use was evident always from the first to the last time. I was reckless, impulsive, and unable to regulate my emotions. I smoked pot nearly every day in high school. I cut school and I got bad grades. When I was 15 years old, I got drunk at my best friend's house and spent the night unexpectedly and unauthorized by my folks. Absent without leave was not an allowable offense in my home, and I was afraid to call them. My parents sent my brother to tell me that I was not allowed to come home. It was the beginning of my sophomore year, and I moved in with my sibling's dad and his wife in Brea, California. I lived with them for 1 year, and in that year, I met the man who fathered my first two children and with whom I had a 17-year relationship. And I had two completely unrelated murders confessed to me by two different close friends I went to school with there, and I eventually testified against them at their trials. It was such a traumatic experience trying to make sense of what they had done, and me, a deeply sensitive, emotionally damaged teenager with a growing drug problem who knew of no other way to deal with overwhelming feelings. I began to drink every day and mentally replay the shock and horror around these murders over and over. I earned two alcohol-related DUIs back-to-back within 3 months when I was 18. My blood alcohol level both times was 0.26, over three times the current legal limit. I moved to Oregon when I was 19, and when the DA flew me to Los Angeles to testify in the second trial, I was 5 months pregnant with my first child. I had not paid my fines or attended alcohol classes, so I did 40 days in jail, much of that in protective custody because I was a witness for the prosecution. I wish that I could tell you that my whole life changed and that I never used again and that I began to grow and evolve, but that's not my story. I earned my third DUI in 1990. I gave birth to our second child in 1991 and we got married. One night in 1993, high on tranquilizers and alcohol, I slammed into a tree three houses down. My neighbor found me at 3 a.m. and pulled me out of the car and took me to the hospital. I lacerated and lost my spleen. I crushed all the bones in both my cheeks and broke three ribs. I had 6 units of blood transfused, facial reconstruction, and spent 2 weeks in the hospital. The doctor said I was lucky to be alive. I didn't feel very lucky. A year later, my brother committed suicide, and that was heartbreaking. I read his autopsy and police reports and the brief note that he left over and over and cried for months until my husband told me to put it away, that I would never find the answers I sought. They just weren't there. Fast forward to 1998, I went back to school and got a paralegal degree. My folks were proud of me. I pulled nearly a 4.0 average in an 11-month accelerated course while working full-time. They didn't know that I was using barbiturates and tranquilizers the whole time. By now, I had used a lot of different drugs, but pot and prescription pills were a daily thing. I was isolated, depressed, and mostly unemployed all those years since the car accident. I never knew whether my depression was primary or secondary, whether I used because I was depressed or whether I was depressed because I used. But I can tell you that I was the most miserable person that I knew. It never really occurred to me that maybe I should just stop using drugs. I had done it for so long and from such a young age that I didn't even know there was another way to live. I filed for divorce and it was final the same month I got my degree. I now had a relationship, one that extended beyond just financial support with my folks, mainly because we all had computers and would communicate through them. My dad offered me the opportunity to move to California, live in one of their condos, and work for his business, which he still owned and semi-managed from Oregon. I am now 32 and my boys are 7 and 12. I remember my dad calling me one night before I left Oregon saying, "Whatever it is that you're running from, it's going to follow you there." And it did. 4 months into my new life, my father was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer and given 6 months to live. And I was still the same little girl inside who couldn't see outside her own pain. And I found a doctor and got a prescription for tranquilizers and barbiturates shortly thereafter. My dad was going to die, and I had just started to have a relationship with him, and now I would never have with him. And what I didn't even realize, I was seeking. It wasn't fair. I cried every single day. I took away too many pills. And I felt sorry for myself. I bargained with God, asking him to take me instead. I was so high 3 months into his death sentence that I slid under a semi-truck on the freeway at 4 in the afternoon and I totaled yet another car. The passenger side of my little car was flattened from the top down. Firefighters cut me out. And they took me to the hospital where I had a large laceration on the right side of my head sewn up. The doctors kept calling me their miracle child. And a cop showed up and declined to do a blood draw. And I did not receive a DUI that day, though I clearly deserved one. It's now 1999 and my dad has passed away. I am estranged from my family, who are really sick of my drama, chaos, and misery, and I am judged harshly, especially by my sister. And I again felt like I was all alone. My boys fly up to visit my sister, and they never come back to LA. I couldn't take care of them anymore. I couldn't take care of anything. I was an emotional train wreck. I wasn't afraid to die, but it was the slow living death
it was taking its toll on me. It was during this time in my life that I stepped off the agnostic fence and I decided that there was no God. I was angry. I was hurt. And I was hopeless. So now I am unemployed again. I am deeply depressed. I'm drinking, popping pills every day. And I meet a meth dealer in a bar. We had an unpredictable and abusive 6-month relationship. I got pregnant and I made the decision to terminate the pregnancy. I had used meth nearly every day for the first 3 months I was pregnant. And the day before I was going to have the procedure, my lung spontaneously collapsed, began to bleed, and I ended up in the hospital while doctors removed 20% of it. It took a couple of weeks to recover, and by the time I could find a doctor who would do the abortion, I was almost 4 months pregnant, and I could feel her moving, and I couldn't go through with it. Instead, I got in touch with an adoption agency, and I picked out her parents. I reviewed many portfolios, and I chose this amazing Christian couple from Texas, married for 12 years, unable to have children. And they had such a strong sense of family. They were perfect. I believed that they could and would give my daughter everything I never had and everything I couldn't give. I went into labor and delivered her breech alone in a county hospital in Southern California. She was healthy and so little, and I was numb and detached, but I have never doubted my decision to give her a better life without me. I moved back to Oregon in 2001 and in with a strong Christian friend, a co-worker from 1998, who told me about Jesus when we worked together. She led me in 98 in the sinner's prayer, but my heart wasn't in it. I was just grasping and using, always using. This first Christian friend of mine has been one of the greatest single influences in my life. Just by being Jesus to me over and over all those years, opening her heart and home to me time and time again, always kind, always loving, in spite of my drug use, my words, and my actions. I love her with all my heart. She remains one of my closest friends to this day. But what happened over the next 5 years is a blur. I was full of guilt, shame, regret, and an incredible amount of self-loathing. I was sure that what I had done by abandoning my children, causing my parents a lifetime of heartache, especially while my father was fighting for his life, and using drugs while pregnant with and giving birth to a child I gave up was unforgivable. The fact that my family had separated themselves from me only drove me deeper into my disease. And I couldn't see that some of them were doing it for their own emotional survival. I desperately wanted absolution, and I was sure that it would never come. I found it hard to re-engage with my children, even during the short periods of time I was able to put together. It was too painful. I spent those 5 years drinking, doing meth, my drug of choice, and then switching to heroin. I swore I would never use a needle. I mean, I really hate needles. But there I was, an IV drug user for the first time at 34 years old. That is the progression of this disease. In 2003 and 2004, I was going to Bible studies on Wednesday night, on Wednesdays and church on Sunday. A few times I was really high when I went, but I still felt that I led to go anyway. It was like I was this rope and God and Satan were on opposite ends of it in a tug of war for my very life. I cleaned up in 2005 and I asked Christ to come into my life. I asked him over and over again in case he didn't hear me the first time. I stopped listening to secular music because it was a big trigger for me, and instead I listened to sermons on my way to work in the morning. I stopped blaming a God that I didn't even know. and I started to learn about him. I began slowly taking responsibility for the mess that I created. I still managed to relapse 6 months later. While I had a new growing desire to know Jesus, I still had serious trust issues and an unresolved drug problem. And since history repeats itself when I use, I got back-to-back drug DUIs 3 months apart in 2006. Just like when I was 18, I had now come full circle. I got diversion in Oregon and a conviction in Washington, and I was sentenced to an overnight in jail and treatment. With all the law changes, I was facing real treatment for the first time in my life. I was 40 years old and terrified, but it was really good for me, and it brought me to Narcotics Anonymous. My drug use had always been such a secret, isolating me. And I remember the day that I realized I could finally hold my head up because I was clean. God was on my side. And the truth had set me free. Those early days, finally saying the words, "I'm an addict and powerless," and believing that God could turn my insanity around. And when I practiced turning my will over to him, real change started to happen. I met other people who had similar struggles with life and drugs and had found a way out. I latched onto strong women in recovery, and I began to have real relationships. My spiritual life was growing. I was learning to pause before and after I did and said things and to listen for God's voice. I really wanted to do the next right thing. Then I began a romantic relationship with another recovering addict when I had 9 months clean. Big mistake. I may have been clean and a born-again Christian, but I had no clue what a healthy romantic relationship looked like. I'd never had one before. I ignored all the red flags and followed my feelings. Our value systems were polar opposite. We were unequally yoked, and when we got married in December of 2008, we began to have problems almost immediately. When I found out he was cheating on me less than 2 years into the marriage, and after an attempt to save the marriage via counseling, I filed for divorce and relapsed on tranquilizers shortly after my 4-year clean milestone. Divorce is a huge trip through powerlessness. Pride showed up, moved in, and it was a crazy maker for me while I tried to control the whirlwind with no success. One of the things I learned during that relapse is that after 4 years of not smoking pot, it made me paranoid, unmotivated, depressed, and I had grown to immensely dislike the effect of it. Another thing that I learned is that I still had no control over alcohol. And both times I drank, it led me back to my drug of choice. I guess what I want you to know is that after over 4 years of abstinence, I still could not control my use. And I know now that I never will. I am not confused about this. One is too many, and 1,000 is never enough. The divorce that I was in such a hurry to get was final in June of 2011. But I was still lost and wandering around in the desert when I came to celebrate recovery in January of 2012. I was spiritually empty, angry, and bitter. But I wasn't blaming God this time. I was far too busy alternating the blame between my ex and myself and wallowing in self-pity. I really loved the worship in these rooms, the teachings, and the testimonies, but I struggled in small group, and I had a hard time getting connected. This was less a problem with the group and more a problem with me, my trust issues, and my limitations. And looking back, I can see that I was continuing to punish myself for my most recent failures. I didn't want to share what was going on, and it could be that I didn't really know what was going on. I just know my heart hurt so bad that some days I didn't know how I would make it through. But I did, and I kept coming back even when I didn't want to, even though I continued to use, and even though my heart was broken and darkness surrounded me, even on those days that God seemed so far away. I prayed and prayed that he would anchor my weary soul, and he did. He did. Our God is a God of restoration, and the gifts that he has given me since I first entered recovery in 2006 have been countless. First, my relationship with my mom has been such a blessing. She started to reconnect with me again in 2005, and if you ask her today why she supported me, even in the midst of all my legal problems, she would tell you it's because she found Jesus while my father was dying, and that Jesus kept teaching her about unconditional love until she felt that she could put it into practice. She didn't know how to fix my problems, but she learned how to love me unconditionally, and her love has made such a difference in my life. I've talked to her on the phone most mornings for the last 12 years, and we pray for each other and lift each other up. She has been one of my biggest fans and my closest confidant. Never underestimate the power of a mother's love. My relationship with my sons, which was once so complicated and painful for me, it's passed through many stages of healing, and I was able to be a strong, present, and supportive parent when they both struggled with their own drug-related issues. I was able to provide a clean and sober environment for each of them to come and live with me when they needed to, and I regained custody of my youngest when he was 17. If I could change anything, it would be the impact that my addiction and parenting failures had on them. They were just kids, and while I never meant to hurt anyone, that doesn't change the outcome. I was self-absorbed, and I hurt those closest to me, those I was supposed to protect. I didn't give them the childhood they deserved or raise them up in the church to know their God. And above all my regrets, this has been the hardest reality to swallow and to forgive myself for, because I don't get to do it over again. The baby girl that I gave birth to 17 years ago, she is beautiful, she is smart, and she is very loved. I have never spoken to her, but I am Facebook friends with her mom, and I get to see tons of pictures. She's a cheerleader. She loves Jesus, complex dance competitions, and cats. She went on her first mission trip 3 summers ago. And she has my eyes, my father's eyes. I can assure you that she is the best thing that came out of the worst time in my life. And I didn't do that. God did that. My relationship with my sister, which was once so broken, I swore it was beyond repair and we would never be close, has also been transformed. When her husband committed suicide in their home, June of 2013, she moved in with me and stayed for almost 2 years. I can't fix her pain, but my hope is that I have lessened her pain simply by being kind and loving and present. All of those things I couldn't be when I was using and caught up in the triangle of self-obsession. Resentment, anger, and fear are being replaced with acceptance, love, and faith. I continue to trust in God that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will. Not some things, not most things, but all things. I wish so much that I could have found recovery before my dad died. I would like to think that we would understand each other better now. And I would give just about anything to hear him say that he is proud of me.
Sorry.
And who I am today. But I have been given many opportunities to make living amends to my family, and I am so grateful for that. CR is not a dating service, but I did meet the love of my life here 4 years ago, and we've been married almost 3 years now. He has brought so much perspective, understanding, and strong, steady love to my life. He would tell you that it was the first time he heard me share this testimony that he realized he wanted to get to know me better, which is kind of funny since I used to affectionately refer to my testimony as how to lose a guy in 20 minutes or less. He was absolutely one of God's greatest gifts to me. I have been involved in prison ministry since 2014, first with CRI and currently with Prison Fellowship, sharing my experience, strength, and hope with the women inside. I know what it felt like to be separated from my family due to the consequences of my addiction, and the shame and guilt that comes with the territory. I want them to know that they are never alone, even when it feels like it. That if they seek him, they will find him, and he will change their lives. This is my heart's desire, to continue to grow in God's grace and to see his grace work in the lives of other men and women. To the newcomer, I say, keep coming back. Find some people you can trust. Get a sponsor. Get some phone numbers and work the steps. I have completed 4-step studies, and I am leading a new one that just started last night. I think the more we know about Jesus and about ourselves and others, the better chance we have of gaining freedom from our hurts, hang-ups, and habits. Get involved with service. It's harder for me to get caught up in my first world problems when I am busy serving him and others. My husband and I started a new CR in Sherwood 1.5 years ago. We love our people and the opportunity he has given us to share with them a ministry that has changed our lives. I can't tell you why, for over 30 years, I would risk so much for so little. But I can tell you that Jesus changed my stubborn heart. He removed my obsession to self-medicate. And he taught me how to live so that I could be his hands and feet to my family, my friends, and my community. I don't do it perfectly, and I never will. The great thing about that is he doesn't expect me to, and I get to rest in his grace. Last August, I celebrated 5 years clean and sober. Isaiah 43:16 says, the Lord is making roads through the sea. He is making a path for his people, even through rough waters. When I got those back-to-back DUIs in 2006, I thought my life was over and that they would bury me. And instead, God made a path for me, and he used them to save my life. So don't ever give up, ever. Thanks for letting me share.